get into the upcoming interview with our featured guest, I'd like to briefly share some background about our platform. We launched this podcast in 2019, and in the years prior to the military coup, much of our content centered around stories related to Vipassana meditation, Burmese Buddhism, and other spiritual tales. However, after the military coup in 2021, we couldn't in good conscience stay strictly in this lane while so much of the country was under siege. Therefore, while we continue to honor and share stories of meditation and the spiritual journey, our platform has also expanded to amplify the voices of those impacted by the crisis, shedding light on the resilience, resistance, and determination of the Burmese people in their struggle for democracy. Thank you for deciding to join us in this journey. And now, let's hear what today's guest has in store for us. Pyonan, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Insight Myanmar podcast.
Thank you very much for reaching out to me and invite me to participate in this, in your podcast. I study in Russia, in Moscow, Russia, for master and PhD. For master, I study about the socioeconomics and political development of modern Asia. After that, I decided to continue my PhD in the same university. And I did my research on the evolution of Myanmar policy toward China for 1988 to 2010, until the end of NLD administration. After I finished PhD, I relocated to the Thailand, and I now working for the Rock Time Foundation. It's a member of CARE International. In this job, I'm mainly focused on the migrant issue, on the HIV TB, and also labor rights, and also some kind of research connected with the migrant. And in the current time, I have a student from French Nursing University. I have to supervise them during their internship time in my organization and in Thailand. Yeah.
So that's just a snapshot of this varied career, which you've studied Burmese Chinese relations. You've studied in Moscow, so you were in Russia for some time, and you're now in Thailand looking at Burmese migration to Thailand. So this just gives a snapshot of where this conversation will go today in terms of Burmese, Burma-China, Burma-Russia, Burma-Thailand. There's a lot there to talk about and to explore. I think let's start with your time in Moscow. Can you tell us how many years did you spend in Moscow, and what made you want to look at Moscow as a destination of where you wanted to go to study?
Okay, you have a very good question. I have a very long story to tell you. Now, first, in my life, honestly, in my life, I never thought to study in Moscow. This is the first thing. No? I applied many scholarships around 2013 to 2015. At that time, I was graduated and also working as a journalist in Myanmar. and study in the another another country is my dream, you know. Since I'm from the very middle family, I'm pretty sure my parents, they cannot support me to study in another university, like financially, you know. So that every time I decided, like, I should have a scholarship to study there, to study in the other country, in other countries. So one day, before I apply the scholarship for Russia, I already give up to apply for the scholarship in another country, because at the time I already got the stable job in Myanmar. So I decided to continue my life in Myanmar at least 1 or 2 years more. After that, I can go to another country. But suddenly I got information from my teacher, and he shared the information of the Russian scholarship of my university, that Russian university that I study. So after I learned about the university in its official website, I was impressed, because that university doesn't look like as a normal Russian university. And after I learned about the university, it's like, why not? This is a kind of good opportunity for me to exit for Russian, you know. After I discussed with my close friend that I'm thinking to go to Russia, and I still remember that one of my sister, like she's also my good close friend. She graduated from the Japanese university, and she told me like, oh, I never thought that Russian is good place to study for us, you know. I thought it is only for military student. But I replied her like, that's why I wanted to go, you know, because I'm from the civilian, pure civilian, and I will have a Russian scholarship, not from Myanmar government, and I will be if I succeed, I will become a very first Myanmar PhD student, Myanmar student for international relations in Russia within 40 years, since 1970, because most of the students from military, they study for the science, pure science, no one study in the social science and humanity. So that's why. And one of my friend who is working in very famous international media, and he is the only one who encouraged me to go to Moscow. He told me like, you have a good choice, and you did a good right decision, because in Myanmar we have many graduated and scholar from US, England, Singapore, Thailand, Australia, you know. So you will begin a very few very rare products for Myanmar from who graduated from Russia, no? So yeah, I also like this opinion, and that's why I also decided to go to Russia, and I got the scholarship. And yeah, so if I had to move to second part of your questions, I been living there for 7 years, 2 years for master, 1 year for the preparation course for PhD, and another 3 years, and 3.5 years for PhD. So I left my country in September 2015, but I got a chance to return to visit my home in 2017 before I started the preparation course for PhD. And after that, I came back again. After I finished the preparation course, I came back again, and I go back to Moscow for PhD in October 2018. Since at that time, I never has a chance to return home until now, no? Because actually I decided to go back to Myanmar around 2009, at the end of 2019, because I need to collect the data for my research. So, but unfortunately we got a COVID. So my professor, she didn't allow me to return home, and because of the high risk situation, you know, Moscow to Myanmar is not a short way to travel. No? So I also follow her advice, it is one of the, how can I say, set a tie in my life. And okay, the most stressful thing of my PhD time is after the coup in my country, 2021 in February, and first of February. Actually, I already have a work. I already have a job to do in my country to help and to support my teacher university. But because after the coup has happened, I feel like I lost everything, honestly. I mean, I feel like my dream is gone, you know. So I even didn't have a strength to continue my studies. So, but since I'm away from my home, and I also in the middle of PhD, and my teacher or my my supervisor always told me, like, whatever happened in your life, now you have to dedicate every effort of your life to only to PhD, to finish PhD, because you already started, so you have to finish it. You know, she's kind of very strong Russian lady. Mm-hmm. So she always encouraged me like this. She's like kind of my mom, second of my mom for in Russia, but for PhD and regarding with the study, she never she never soft to me, you know. She always, you have to do it, you have to finish it, no matter what, you know, like this. So that's why I think I continue my PhD. Yes, if I have to reconnect the military coup part, after 1 week, we have around 20 students from civilian side. Some of them are from the who studying for the Russian language, who are studying for the education, and in different university. In my university, I'm the only one student from Myanmar. No? So they contact me as a senior student, and we have a group chat. So in this case, yeah, here I have to mention this one, because someone misunderstood and spread the rumor in Myanmar in this coming story. So they contact me that they discussed me, like they wanted to protest in front of the Myanmar embassy and in front of the Russian foreign ministry, not to support the Myanmar military coup. At that time, I told them, they reached out to me because I'm studying politics and also internet, and they wanted to get my advice. So I told I simply told them, short, I simply and shortly replying them like, no, we cannot do it, because we are not in America and other, I mean, other country who are promoting the democracy or something like that, no? We are in Russia. So this is very riskful place for us, and then we are not a majority group of students. Among 700 to 800 students, we are only 20 from Myanmar. I mean, among 700 to 800 Myanmar students, we are only 20. So we cannot do this kind of approach.
You're
And this
only 20 because you're saying out of 700 to 800 Myanmar students who are studying in
Russia.
Russia, 20 are civilian and all the rest are military. Is that
Yes,
what you mean?
yes, yeah.
Okay.
So, so we told the situation is not for us, you know, so we cannot do it. I simply replied to all civilian students that if I cannot stop you, you can go, but I will not participate it because this is very riskful place, and they may stop our study process, and they may how to say, like, they may send back us to the country, you know. So now our goal is to finish our study, to graduate the study. So they, some student, they complain me and stay because they still wanted to do something, you know. So I told them, like, if you want to publish a statement or something like that, I'm okay. Like at the time, not only Russia, as far as I remember, Korea, South Korea, student from South Korea, student from Australia, student from America, student from UK, student from Netherlands, and some European country. They also, I mean, Myanmar student, they also publish a statement by announcing they are not supporting military coup. So they agree. So I myself wrote this statement in Myanmar and English, and another student, they translate it into the Russian. So as a diplomat, as a early diplomat, and as a PhD student, a PhD candidate who are studying for the international relations, I use very diplomatic tone in that statement. That's why I got another complaint from our fellow student, from my fellow student, that I'm very soft with the statement. But in my point of view, we are not going to fight with them. We are just declaring our standpoint, you know. So we don't need to use very strong and rude word to the to that organization, you know. So yeah. Later the chaos is started in Myanmar, and someone, I know who is he, but I don't want to mention his name, someone who informed to my teacher from Myanmar, and like, I'm organizing a product and encourage to the civilian student to do a product in front of the embassy and in front of the Russian Foreign Ministry. I'm the one who support intellectually and financially to them. You know, this is very funny rumor for me, because at that time I was so poor. What I can say, Russian scholarship didn't give a lot. At the time, they give only $70 for PhD student. This is for PhD student. I got a job, I mean, part-time job in Russia, like teaching Myanmar language to the university student, so that I got 1,000, 10,000, 15,000 ruble. So that's why I can survive, no? And then another thing, I got another scholarship from my university because of my research. In my university, for a PhD student, if they can publish at least one article in the first year, they can apply the research scholarship. So I got that scholarship too. So that every month at that time I have 30,000 to 40,000 ruble. So it's a, this is not too much for us, you know, for living expense. So and then I also need to support my family. No, they didn't request me that just I wanted to support them. So that I don't have extra money to support that kind of products. You know, this is one mindset. But in Myanmar the rumor is separate, is like that I'm the one who I'm the main structure to support the Myanmar civilian student to do protests in front of the embassy and in front of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So that my parents, they are very worried about me. And I also didn't want to make a solution for this rumor, you know, because I didn't do it. I at that time I have a friends in embassy and military attache office, and also in the military main office in Nibiru. So I asked them, do you have any news from Moscow that our civilian student made a protest in front of the embassy and in front of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs? They didn't have that kind of news. They didn't have that kind of report from Moscow. So why I need to solve, why I need to explain this rumor, you know? They didn't have official record. So I don't need to explain this matter, no matter what, you know, no matter. So, but yeah, later whoever asked me on this issue, I always say that like, you can see on the record, and the time will answer you that I did it or not. No, I don't have any. I mean, I'm doing a PhD. I'm not a stupid guy. You know, I know what will happen if we did like that in Moscow. You know.
Right. At the same time, you had referenced that the defense attaché at the Myanmar embassy also reached out to you and asked you to make a statement supporting the coup, right?
Not official statement. They wanted me to. They approached me to support. And they very angry with me when they learned that I participate in that published state in that statement.
It sounds like in some ways what's happening is you're in a very serious, rigorous academic field where obviously nuance is the subject of academia. That's what drives academia, and you're being driven into really stark black and white ideological corners, that it's either going to be a strong emotional statement entirely against the military coup, or a show of support that this was right, and the way you're articulating, you're definitely very much against the military coup. It's devastating, but you also have nuance in expressing that. You have nuance in your feeling, as well as strategy and nuance and the way that it has to be articulated. And you were in the situation you were in with the handful of students who didn't support, who strongly didn't support the coup, the military that were studying there that probably did, and of course the embassy that you're being trying to be driven into these ideological corners.
Maybe this is because of my experience and my life experience before I studied in Moscow. As I told you before, I used to work as a journalist in Myanmar for 4 years before I studied in Moscow. So I had a chance to communicate and interact with the opposition side, so-called opposition side. I mean, at the time they are opposition. They were opposition. Yeah? NLD, including Daw Aung San Suu Kyi and other politicians from the opposition side. So, honestly, how can I say like, honestly, now I didn't have full trust on them too, because what I believe is like we need harmony in Myanmar domestic political situation, because you know we cannot remove the standpoint of Aung San Suu Kyi and NLD. At the same time, we cannot fight. That's what I believe. No? We cannot fight with the military all the time. This is because this is a strong institution in Myanmar. Mm.
The counter argument to that would be, can the military ever be trusted partners? If you come to them with good intentions and with the genuine intent to want to have a dialogue and seek some kind of a partnership, they've shown themselves to be unreliable and to say the least, unreliable, and every time they've been brought to the table. And so harmony is an ideal when you have well-intentioned actors coming to the table and being reliable in what they say and do. But the counter argument to what you're saying is that the military has never shown themselves as such.
I mean at the time, because at the time Myanmar started the reform around 2011 to 2015. So Myanmar started the reform process. Myanmar became a very popular state in the war for democratic reforms, and Myanmar became even an example for the democracy movement. Mm. You know, So I don't want to mention the name of the politician, but I used to see some politician from the opposition side. They have a very strong disagreement with the military and at that time the so-called the reform governments, like U Thein Sein government. Even though they didn't have a strong argumentation and strong point of view, they still have very strong to against to the government all the time. I mean, for me, I don't like that kind of situation, you know. I mean, we have to think about our country, you know. We should be like whatever we do, it is only for our country, not for the organization or not for the party. This is what I think. So, yeah, I had a chance to learn many things from the politician from opposition side at that time. And then I got a chance to travel, study in Moscow. And I also had a chance to learn about the situation inside the military young generation, you know. One thing that I have to say, I mean, I don't have any hatred on those person who asked me very openly, but it is what I wanted to tell you is like this is the situation of Myanmar, you know. This is a situation of between two parties. When I arrived in Moscow, after the second day, I was invited for the lunch with the official from Myanmar. And on the lunch table, the wife of the official, she asked me like, "Are you a spy from the opposition side?"
Meaning from the NLD
side,
yeah, mm-hmm. Because you were a civilian in Moscow.
I was a civilian student, and I also used to work as a report journalist. Mm. You know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
So she even asked me very openly on the lunch table.
Yeah,
you were sent by the opposition side. Are you a spy?
Yeah.
Or something like that.
It is funny because it seems like you're constantly finding yourself somewhat out of place. You're one of the few Burmese that goes to study in Moscow that's not coming from a strong military background, on one hand, but then on the other hand, you're one of the few Burmese that has spoken out against the military coup and strongly supports democracy, who happened to also be in Moscow. Mm-hmm. Most people who have those credentials and beliefs don't go to Moscow. Mm-hmm. So I can understand why both sides would look a little askance and have suspicions.
At that time, I used a lot of, I spent a lot of my time by using the Facebook, because I still have a, at that time, I still had a separate of journalists, you know. Mm. So even at that day, I still remember I even uploaded one status, like, because before I met her for the lunch, my close another like kind of she's like my family, she's a judge. She at that time she was a judge, mm. official judge. She told me like, don't change your voice and don't change your standpoint mm. when since you are arrived in Moscow, you know. I mean, what she mean is like, now you are going to support the military because you are studying in mm-hmm, Moscow, something mm-hmm, like that. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, of course not. Mm-hmm. I have my own standpoint. I even replied to my sister like this. And next day, I got that kind of question from the official. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I feel like, I even wrote a statement in the Facebook like, now I'm really beacon on the middleman, because mm. the other side asked me not to change your standpoint, right? Because you are now studying in Moscow. Mm-hmm. But the other side asked me like, are you a spy from opposition side? So now they mm-hmm. pushed me to the middle point. Now mm-hmm. I'm really in the middle point now. Mm-hmm. Middleman now.
Yeah. And you mentioned that this also gave you the opportunity to understand the belief system and the psychology of the younger generation mm-hmm. of Myanmar military mm-hmm. who have been going to Russia in higher mm-hmm. and higher numbers, even before the coup, certainly after. And so as you got to know some of these Burmese future military studying mm-hmm. In Moscow, what did you understand about them?
What I have to say is like, first of all, most of them are lack of experience. Mm-hmm. Professional experience. Why I said like this is like, they just finished their bachelor degree, and within a 1 year or within a 1.5 year, they were sent to the Moscow to study master.
So they finished their bachelor degree in Myanmar, from Myanmar University.
From Defense Service Academy.
Right, but if they're getting their bachelor's in Myanmar, the standards are already not quite international standards, so they're going from a Myanmar university, for whatever that means mm-hmm. in terms of quality, mm-hmm. then onto a Russian mm-hmm. university for master's. So mm-hmm. yes, this is quite a jump and lack of experience.
Yeah, and then they never work as an officer in their... I mean, they may have a... Mm-hmm. tied to work as an officer in their respective unit,
right?
But just only for a short time. Uh-huh. This situation cannot give a good experience to them.
They don't have a lot of field experience.
Yeah. Not only my viewpoint, but also my supervisor viewpoint. You know, 5 military officers used to apply my program for master degree. Yeah. And I didn't know it, honestly. I really didn't know it when they apply. Yeah, this is another thing I wanted to tell in this interview. I honestly didn't know when they apply to my program. One day my teacher, my professor called me to visit her office. So I visit there. And when I arrived, she told me like, I got a 5 application from the military. Okay, yeah, why not? You can, if they are okay, you can accept. But my professor told me like, Yan, they are from military. I can swear now, I even told them, why not? If they can speak and if they can study, why not? You know, you can accept that. And she told me like, no, I mean, they have only pure military experience. Oh. Did they show you the English certificate or something like that? No, they didn't. And okay. I even complained to my professor. I also study my first degree was mechanical engineering. I even so that I even complained to my professor like I also got mechanical engineering as my first degree, but you accept it to me as your student here. And she told me like, no, it's a different situation. You have 4 year experience of journalists, but they don't have that kind of experience. And most of all of them are from the pure science background. I mean, some of them are mathematics and physics. So how can I accept them? And she told me like I really doubt on them that they can communicate in the classroom or not. So I decided to reject them. But before I reject them, I wanted to know that did they inform you about them, or did they ask any recommendation from you? So if you have recommendation for one or two, I may think of, I may rethink. So I told her like, no, I didn't have any information from them. I just know when you talk to me. So she rejected them. But in Myanmar, in military attache office, some of them misunderstood that I asked my professor to reject them. But the story is not like this.
Sure, right. So what was it like to have so many hundreds of young Burmese military coming to Moscow to study, and they're really coming from one sheltered existence to another with one kind of propagandized thinking to perceivably another? I don't know exactly what their experience, and certainly going to Russia is going to widen and open their experience somewhat, but how much that's going to widen them about the wider world, I'm not sure. What did you find about this kind of transition?
I have found two types of student, I mean, two type of military student. One type is always spend their time in the room with the other fellow military student, never go out. They have only they go out only for the university, and the university also set up a special classroom for them. That classroom only have Myanmar student. You know what I mean, right? So they didn't have many interaction time with international students, not only with the Russian but also with another student from another country. But another student, they are kind of quite active. They think that their study in Moscow is kind of opportunity for them, so they're trying to go out as much as they can, and they're trying to interact with the international student. What I can say is most of them who are from the university, which doesn't have a special classroom, so they have to communicate with the international student, you know, no matter what. So like this, and another thing is like Myanmar cultural way of thinking, not only the military. Which I can say is it's also the Myanmar culture thinking. Like when you are talking with white people or international people, some Myanmar people, they may think like you are showing off your skill. You know, like you can speak English or you can communicate with the white people or something like that. And as an organization, as an institution who are very which is very focused and very strong in senior junior relationship, and the very strong on protecting their image or something like that. They have many pressure, I mean psychological pressure, you know. Sometimes some more than they afraid to communicate with the foreigner, especially white people or something like that, you know, because like yeah, because of those kind of psychological brainstorming, what they got from their training. Not me. Another thing is, I could say, like, not only in the military, but also in Myanmar society, it's something like that. So even I got some criticism from Myanmar community, not only from the civilian student, but also from the other student. Like, I'm kind of showing off guy who always communicate with, who always only communicate with the international student, not with Myanmar student, you know. I communicate with Myanmar student when we have to celebrate something together or something like that. But in my point of view, I always encourage my point of view to the other student, no matter he or she from the military or the civilian side. I always encourage them. One thing is like, now we are studying in the another country, so we should communicate with the international student, you know. We can communicate with Myanmar student all the time. You know what I mean, right? We are going to study here only for 2 years. So within 2 years, we should have a connection or something like that, something real experience of international student. So that's what I'm thinking, you know. So I even live with the international student. So yeah, that kind of thing. So what I could say is like some student from military, they got a very good experience. They very became an outstanding student in the Russian university, and some are like just a normal student and normal student who live only in the dormitory and the university and finish their study. That's all.
So that's interesting. When you say that some have become a very outstanding student, there's a couple of different ways to take that. One means that they're an outstanding student in the sense that they have opened themselves up to an international experience of other ways of thinking. They've met other international students, not just Russians. They've exposed and expanded their worldview. And one would hope they might bring a level of sophistication and nuance back into thinking about the betterment of their country, not just the betterment of the military, but the betterment of the country. Another way to think about them becoming a very outstanding student is they have learned how to better oppress and conduct surveillance and be more brutal and have an iron fist with firmer control, and that they will, when they go back to Myanmar, they will be more effective basically at being cruel and oppressive. And so which one did you mean when you said that some became an outstanding student?
I wanted to prefer the first one.
I would like to prefer that too, but is that the case?
Actually, yeah. During your asking question to me, in my mind, I got some thought. I got some reflection. Like, I have found three or four officers. They are very good at their subjects. As far as I remember, like there was one officer, he even finished in Europe they call postdoctorate, but in Russia we call doctor of science. In the record, for the rocket and some kind of subject, you know. He was very good at this subject, and as far as I remember, at that time, he was selected to attend conference of some kind of workshop even in NASA, as a student from Russian university or something like that. And we still have very outstanding student. They still have outstanding student in Moscow. When you ask me this question, I reflected them and I thinking about them, like, no, they are very quiet. I mean, I didn't see them in the very strong position to brutal the strong position to support the military coup or something like that. Maybe since I'm away from my country, I don't see the real scenario, but I didn't hear about their news for a long time now. And what they study in Moscow and what they have achieved in Moscow is very useful to build at my country technology and science mm-hmm. in the future. Mm-hmm. That's what I believe. Mm-hmm. So I hope in one day we would have that kind of good situation and good opportunity to use their knowledge and education for our country development in a good way.
Mm.
But until now, mm. I don't know what they are doing and mm. what they have done. Yeah.
Mm, sure. Now, you talked about the military coup just now, and you talked about it before. This was a pivotal moment in your time in Moscow, and you've painted a picture somewhat of how the defense attaché reached out to you, how the students also reached out to you. I'm wondering if you can go into a little more detail about the reaction in Moscow from other parties when the coup happened. Particularly, I'm thinking, on one hand, if you can talk about the soldiers, the military that was there studying, the 700 to 800 people of those that you were in contact with, if you can give us some shape of the conversation of how they understood it, how they felt. What they were thinking about it, if they might not have been able to express some things openly. Some probably very openly supported it and felt that way as well. Others maybe not so much. But if you could tell us on one hand the shade of feeling among the military student population, on the other hand, among your Russian professors and Russian friends, as far as they knew about what was happening in Myanmar and were aware of it. And of course, we've seen growing Russian-Burmese ties through the years. To what degree did you get a sense of their opinions about what was happening with the coup and their feelings towards that?
Yeah, of course, I got many reaction and critical conversation with the student from military side mm. and also my son of my friend. Mm. Actually, I got some close friend from military student side. Some of them request me to stop because they worry about my situation, and some of them they understood my situation and my feeling, and but they remind me like, you are stay a Myanmar citizen, so please be careful sometime, you know. Some of them they also cannot accept the military coup, and I told them like, as you know, as you see my reaction in Moscow, you know I'm not fighting to destroy your life or something like that. You know, I just cannot accept the situation of my country. This is the things. And on the other hand, I also lost some friends, so-called friends. After they learned that I published a statement, they stopped talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. Yeah. You know, I'm not, as I told you before, like I'm not going to destroy their life. You know, I just speak out my feeling that I cannot accept my country situation because the coup is not the solution for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I accept that there were many errors from the NLD government at the NLD administration at that time, but the coup is not the real solution for us. So most of my friends from military side, they also understand on this point because we are the same generation, you mm-hmm. know, so that they know the situation. But since they are stay in the officer, so they have to be careful. And some of them, they approach me, like one officer from the military attaché, he even called me and he asked me like, when did you do? You are such a good guy with a good background in Myanmar and you study politics and international relations in the privileged university of Russia. Why did you do this? You have a very good opportunity, very good future when you return home. Mm. Or something like that. I know. Mm. Of course I know. I can be an elite academy in Myanmar if I have, if I support, you know. But this is not what I believe.
Yeah.
That's the problem, you know. This is not what I believe, and I cannot betray myself.
Yeah.
And sincerely, I know that this is not a good solution for us and for the country. And then I even told him one thing, like, he told me that, oh, you didn't support the NLD government, NLD administration at the time. I know that you didn't fully support the NLD administration. Yes, I am. But it doesn't mean that I support the military, you know, whatever, right? Our 19th generation, they were born under the military administration, no? Military government time. So no matter we have very bad situation in Myanmar, we never wanted to get a military government again in my country. This is what the 19th generation, the majority of 90s generation thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see the generation X, Y, Z, they have more strong thinking like this. You know? Unfortunately, he also passed away in front line after he finished his duty in Moscow. So, for your question, if I have to answer for your question, yes, I got many, the military coup has changed my relationship not only with my family, with my friends, and with my connection from Myanmar and Russia to Myanmar.
Mm.
It's significantly changed.
I imagine for everyone. Now, how about on the Russian side? As far as you talk to professors and other Russian students in political science, to whatever degree they knew about what was happening in Myanmar, what were the range of opinions you heard?
Of course, I got fully support from all of my international classmates,
mm-hmm.
and international student side, and also also from Russian students. You know, this is the history and. But maybe is this also the history and background of my, maybe is this also depend on the academic freedom and intellectual freedom of my university too. My university is kind of famous for the academic freedom and intellectual freedom in Moscow. When the Navalny case has happened in Moscow, the majority of student products appear from my university.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know exactly is this connected or not, but after that, Russian government changed the rata of my university, and they also reduced some kind of freedom in my university too.
After the coup.
Yeah. Before the coup.
Mm-hmm.
So when around 2019, starting from 2019 to 2020, it's a reform period of my university, but not so visibly.
Mm-hmm.
But after Russian fight with the Ukraine, this is more visibly
right.
in my university too.
Right.
But student has a very strong opinion against the military coup in my university too.
Interesting.
Yeah, they asked me, well, if I need their support or something like that. But they also understood my situation too.
Mm. And how about from the administration of the professors?
My professor, as I told you before, like, she's very, when she learned that I published a statement against the military coup, she was very angry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was very angry that, like, she worried a lot my situation.
So was she angry because you would put yourself at risk, or was she angry because she didn't agree with your belief that the military coup was wrong.
The other time she didn't show her way of thinking.
Mm.
She just show her anger and she just show her worry to me because she thought that I put myself in a difficult situation and she afraid that I would not finish. Because another thing that I have to mention is that I also was the very first Myanmar student for her.
Mm.
And I also was the first Myanmar first PhD student for our PhD school. At the time my department PhD school opened with me. So I was the first mm. batch of PhD and only one student. So their reason is very simple. They wanted me to achieve the PhD.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
They don't want I lose my PhD or something like that, you know. So this is what I think is like this is the first priority for them.
Mm-hmm.
But she never show her standpoint on whether she agree or not to the military coup yet.
Now, as you're in Russia and you and all the years that you're living there, I'm also curious myself, just because my own background as well as the background of this podcast came out of an interest in Burmese Buddhism and meditation and mm-hmm. those kind of spiritual stories. And we've seen in the way that Burmese Buddhism has been co-opted and has had some monks having a more nationalistic flair. Mm-hmm. But we've also seen how that's how it's taken shape in Moscow, in Russia specifically. We've seen visits from the likes of like Sitaku Sayeda or Damaduta Shikenda. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if in your time in Russia, you when these monks or other monks would come, if you had any contact or if you saw the contact they had with the Myanmar military students or Russian officials, or what kind of Buddhist activities were happening in Moscow as well?
Yeah. At that time, I think I can use we are establishing the Buddhist center in Moscow as the very first Buddhist center in Russia.
Oh, you helped to establish that
for Theravada. Yeah, I used to work as a volunteer uh-huh. in that Buddhist center too. Yeah. Yeah. What I can say, actually, okay, since you mentioned my teacher name,
Who was your teacher?
I was a student of Damaduta Shinsei Genga.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
What I can say, maybe you may have a different opinion. Of course, like as other Myanmar people, you know, they have very strong different opinion on him and on some Buddhist man. But what I can tell you here is like, as a Buddhist man, they didn't have a choice, and they cannot say who can come to him or who cannot come to him, you know. As a student of him, I used to have an experience like many politicians and many officers from the government and military, they always wanted to come to him, to come to meet him, you know. This is not only the mindset of military, this is also the mindset of Myanmar Buddhism that they need to change. You know, what thing is like, they wanted to approach the famous Buddhist man rather than the monk, who the normal monk, you know. So like this, you know, I even told, so that I can tell you what I can tell you is like, both group trying to approach him, not only him, also Sitaku Sayeda, and both group trying to use the power and image of the monk for their purpose until now. So yeah, but another thing that we cannot forget is like his profession is Buddhist monk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so his duty is to protect the Buddhism, and like if I have to say Buddhism and Myanmar culture or Myanmar tradition,
mm-hmm.
you know, because Myanmar culture and Myanmar tradition is also connected with the Buddhist culture and mm-hmm. Buddhist tradition.
Well, of the Bamar people, of
yeah.
course. Yeah,
yeah, like this.
Of the ethnic people
yeah, yeah.
and their religions
yeah.
and culture,
yeah.
this is a different story.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. like this. So, as a student from the monastery, another thing what I can tell you is, I don't want to say some monk who are involving in the fighting.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say some monk who are really investing their life in the monastery, you know. For what I can learn from the monastery education is like most of the men who are mostly investing their time in monastery, they have a very kind heart and good heart. And the problem is like sometimes they are only focusing on the dhamma. You know, sometimes they have lack of awareness on the people impurity and in honesty things and talking. You know what I mean, right?
Yeah, and I think this is where the question comes, and we've explored this question quite a bit on this podcast of Sidigu Sayadaw, Dhammaduta Sayadaw, not so much, but with Sidigu Sayadaw that we've explored the question of to what degree is he being shaped by the trappings of power and prestige and money, and he's kind of intentionally fallen into the wrong path and should therefore be condemned and criticized as such? And to what degree is he getting wrong information? Is he caught in certain religious or spiritual or philosophical Buddhist ways of looking at things and is unaware of how his actions are being perceived and not getting the correct information? So there's this dynamic that one can consider and one can argue about. I think though, you know, to present a counter argument, I respect that you have come from a background long before any of this took place where you've considered Dhammaduta Sayadaw as your teacher, as one who is imparting questions of morality, spirituality, ethics, scholarship and meditation perhaps, and that there's this bond that becomes sensitive in times like these, as happens in any civil war or unrest, that you know, one has to examine every aspect of relationship. I would also throw in there, however, that the military has also sought to co-opt the likes of Pa'ok Sayadaw
mm-hmm.
and Dr. Nandamala.
Mm-hmm.
And in both cases, they were rebuffed.
Mm-hmm.
They were... these are examples mm. of one, a meditation teacher, one, a scholar.
Mm.
They're both examples mm-hmm. where neither of them came out to be anti-military, neither of them came out to be pro-democracy or to make political statements, yet both of them very firmly, and anecdotes I've heard from both sides of militaries, you know, military representatives basically storming the gates to try to get their signing off. In both cases, they've just said they bypassed it. Just said no, we're not going to wait. We're not going to be involved in this. You know, go do your own thing. I'm going to teach meditation. I'm going to teach scholarship. And so much so that even on the side of the democracy movement, there have been some have been dismayed that they have not made more of a stand for you know, for quote unquote the people. So so there is this strange, we're saying this in Buddhism, but there is this middle way, there is this middle path.
Mm.
And one would argue that accepting offers from military aligned individuals to go to Moscow and talk to military on repeated visits and to welcome high senior members of the military into discourses and such, that this is not so much a neutral decision. Pa'ok and not Dr. Nandamala would be more neutral decisions. This, in the case of Dhammaduta Sayadaw, this is not a neutral decision to engage with this, one can go down the road of how much is just this horribly neglectful and not understanding circumstances, and how much of this is buying into a different path. But you know, certainly this is making a move in that direction. And the counter argument I also give in these circumstances is, and I've thought this a lot with Siddhu Seda, again, Dhammadutta Seda, I know less with, one of the kind of Siddhu apologist arguments I get is, oh, these military just, they wanted to come to give some offering or to hear a speech or, you know, something like that. He accepts everyone who comes. And I say, oh, great. So are you saying if you had CDM teachers who showed up in Siddhu Monastery and they wanted, would they be accepted? Would they be safe? Well, what about PDF fighters? What about ethnic, what about Buddhist EAOs, you know, that also wanted to come? No, the argument falls apart. That's not true. You can't say that these are just people who happen to come and he's, you know, he's responding as he would to anyone, because he's not. He's responding this way because these are people with power, with money, with influence. And if some poor or marginalized person came from some other side, they likely wouldn't have been accepted so easily. I have another friend who was also a disciple of Dhammadutta, and if memory serves me right, I'd have to go back and make sure that these details are correct. I believe he was saying that he, as a child, he would go to learn from the Buddhist sessions that were being taught, and then later went to volunteer there and spent some time as a volunteer teaching English. And then when the coup happened and he became very strongly supporting the democracy movement, he was absolutely heartbroken that Dhammadutta Sayadaw didn't speak out the way that he was hoping to. He felt that he had given his life to support Dhammadutta's mission and the good that Dhammadutta was doing, and also to receive his teachings, and felt abandoned in that moment. Now, I'm giving all this background, and I want to be clear that we are having a nuanced conversation from different perspectives, and we're bringing different things in. This is the point of a podcast conversation. This is how we engage with it. This is not an unnuanced black and white good versus evil conversation where we're trying to trap each other in corners with different arguments. This is an experience where we're both trying to learn from each other, and the audience that's coming to this is also learning from us. Yeah. So,
since you came up with many information, I should tell you one thing. Like, I got information of scholarship from Moscow. This is from my teacher. It's from Dhammadutta. So this is one thing that I didn't tell you before. Yes, I quite already familiar with what you are talk to me right now, and I got some, even I got some situation like the group of people are talking very aggressively about my teacher in front of me, even in my workplace, you know. Like, okay, I don't want to talk about the Siddhu Seda because I'm not close to him, and I visited some only two or three times in my lifetime, and I not even have a chance to talk with him for a long time, or very little, no? So I don't want to talk, I don't want to say something on him. I'm afraid that I will give you the wrong information. But Conaden with my teacher, so he participated as one of the founder of Buddhist center in Moscow. But later, Siddhu Seda continued the project. Okay, so that another thing is like his respect on his teacher, not only the Siddhu Seda, but also the other senior man in Myanmar. This is what I always follow from him. You know, he's very, even though he's famous in Myanmar, he always act like as a child in front of all his teacher. You know, he's always like this. I really like it. I really like this. So when the Siddhu Seda asked him to go with him, travel with him to the Moscow, he cannot deny, because this is kind of, I mean, I don't want to say command, is this kind of request from the teacher, you know, so that he cannot deny and he have to travel with him. So this is the one thing. Another thing, like this is purely my opinion that I have to tell you. This is purely my opinion. Maybe what before I tell you is like, you may think like I'm biased on him. So if you think like that, it's okay. It may be correct. It may be correct because he's like my second father. I really love him and we used to close. So I know about him. As other student and as other disciple, I was also very not angry, like didn't have an answer. I couldn't find a reason why he didn't speak out when the revolution started and when after the coup. But what I learned from the other side, he somehow talked to the military leaders not to kill the people or something like that. This is outsider didn't know about this, but he told them. That's what I know. But he didn't come out publicly, because if I have you talk about the Pao Siaro and Pamukkajuk Siaro Shinanamala, so that I also have to answer you question connecting with these two senior Siaro. The difference between Pao Siaro Ji and Siaro Pamukkajuk Siaro is like most of their disciples are not a young generation. You know what I mean, right?
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm. Pao Siaro Ji is purely focused on meditation.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean, right? Siaro Nanamala, sorry, I cannot, in Buddhist culture, I cannot speak his name. I have to use like Pamukkajuk Siaro Ji, you know? Pamukkajuk Siaro Ji is also like almost same as Pao Siaro Ji. So this is the first situation that I got an answer myself after I seriously thinking about my teacher situation in Moscow, during my time in Moscow, because I lost connection with him too, you know, because someone gave him the false information that I organized and support the products in front of Myanmar Embassy and Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So what I got the answer from my thinking is like, if he speak out, or if he stand on the protest and revolution, like, no, I cannot support the military coup or something like that. You know, our young generation, Generation Y, Generation X, Generation Y, Generation Z, Generation F are now. You know, do they silence? No, of course not. We may think like, oh, our teacher is in front of us now, you know? So why we not fight this, you know? I don't want to pull in other people's feeling in here. If I have to say only my feeling, if my teacher stand like this, I will stop my study and I will return back to my country to support him. So you will see. Do you think, and okay, he is the generation of he is the generation who grew up under the Ne Win era. So all of his life is, like 80% of his life were under the dictatorship time in Myanmar. So he knows the situation, you know. I'm not praising my teacher, you know. I don't have a position to price his wisdom and thinking. But he's always, his thoughts are beyond our thinking sometimes. What my own way of thinking and feeling and respect on him. So yeah, I got this answer. If he stand out, I could say that the majority of his young generation disbeliever will come out too. And the thing more becomes strong. And if the military, no matter what military is starting to shoot, you know, they started the shoot.
Mm-hmm.
So if this kind of thing happen, what will happen? The most chaos and the most distracting history will begin in our country, you know, if we have to think like that far.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why he didn't come up, but he held many people behind the curtain and behind the scenario. That's what I know personally. And after that, another thing is he is the thing we cannot forget, whatever we talk about Tamaduda Seyaro, is he is a monk. He's not a human. You know what I mean, right? Even a Theravada Buddhist man, you can sense. Even saying the Theravada Buddhist man is, Myanmar is more strong on the practice and moral issue, you know. Another thing is like, how can I say? Sometimes I also, you know, one day, I think after I finished master, I returned to home and I held him for his university. One day I even told him, like, when I angry with something, I even told him, like, both politicians and military, they always try to use the man, you know, to get their things or to get their achievement or something like that, you know. But after that, both sides always complain, like, the most distracting things in Myanmar is the man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
So they are using the man. What I'm thinking, like, I even told my teacher directly like this, and he just smiling, you know. This is a situation of Myanmar politics, you
mm-hmm.
know. They are, both of them, they trying to use the religious things.
That's true, but I would and that is true, and it's a circumstance of you know, state and church that you find anywhere,
mm.
and that is an unfortunate tool that as you start to get into Dhamma practice and meditation does make things a bit confusing and messy. However, I would say that there are other prominent monks from Ne Win's generation that have chosen differently and have chosen to engage in a way that is not being quote-unquote an activist monk, that is using the robes as a tool to be able to advance their own political aims. I mean, what comes to mind is like a Shin Kovida we've had on here, Junpin Sayadaw, they've both spoken on our podcast, and these are very seriously minded monks that have that have built schools and have meditation techniques and programs and monasteries and meditation centers, and that have that have very strong credentials as a very rigorous and revered Buddhist monk, and yet have also opened up dialogue about an inclusive state that can welcome all religions, that doesn't need to use protection of Buddhism and state sponsorship of Buddhism as a justification for violence, for protecting Buddhism, that sees that, to quote Shin Covita's words on our podcast, saying the best way you can protect Buddhism is to practice. That's the best way you can protect it. Just practice the damn thing, you know, just meditate. That's the way that you preserve it, not by, not through this violence, not by suppressing other people. Or I'm thinking of, I mean, how much greater of an example can one look than, say, to Upendita, you know, one of the most respected and revered Buddhist monks in Burma of the last 100 years, easily a disciple of Mahasi Sayadaw, and someone who was certainly, no one could ever say that he was prone to political speeches or movements. And yet through, you know, some of the stories that I've heard that have been shared, again, on this podcast, of the ways that he would would not allow himself to be used as a tool for military propaganda, and the way that he suffered by it. So, like, I'm thinking of that. I was thinking of Upendita as an example when you talked about Siddhagusayadaw inviting Dhammaduta to come by the plane, and that being somewhat of an obligation you know, how do you turn this down? Okay, I understand that this is a very hard situation he's in. I think that nuance has to be on the record. People have to know. I don't think it's fair for people just to say, oh, come on, why did he go along with this? He could have, he had every, you know, reason in the world to not do it. No, I understand that that level of detail helps to understand the difficult situation that he found himself in, and the challenge in being able how to maneuver that. That's granted. However, Sayadaw Upendita also found himself in very challenging situations where he also had very little room to maneuver, and he showed a measure of moral courage in the way that he was, without being, again, an activist political monk, it took great spine and great courage to be able to respond in certain ways that did not give outward signs of respect to a military that was killing its own people, and did not give them legitimacy. He understood that, even though he was a very serious meditation and scholarly monk, he understood how his actions could give legitimacy, and he made very hard decisions, which he paid consequences for, to not make those decisions in order to not confer the legitimacy on them. Or I'm thinking of, this might not be the best example, but it also comes to mind, I think it might have been Chalmay Sayadaw, although I could be wrong. It was a talk.
Chalmay Sayadaw.
It was from last year, uh-huh. And it was a talk. It was a Dhamma talk, uh-huh. Where he was emphasizing the virtues, uh-huh. of the Buddha, and he kept holding his three fingers up to count them, and it was just kind of a subtle, clever, uh-huh. way to indicate that. And you know, you mentioned Dhammaduta Sayadaw. It's not known, but behind closed doors, he did encourage the military not to kill people. Maybe he saved some lives that way. Wonderful if he did. I don't think the military has really been listening 4 years on to whatever that advice was. But also, one would, you know, one would like to see some subtle acts, again, of moral courage. I'm not singling out Dhammaduta Sayadaw, but if you are a revered monk and you know that you have the ear of a military that's engaged in breaking all of the precepts that you hold dear, that what type of engagement can you have? I understand this is not easy stuff. I'm not saying, oh, just do this, just do that, just make it work this way. No, I understand how a tightrope that you're walking. You know, far be it from me to be standing from the observer deck saying, you should do this, you should do that, why don't you do this? It's not that easy, I get that. Mm-hmm. But it's also, these are the moments of history where we find ourselves in positions that aren't that easy, and we find ways to maneuver. And again, this is not a targeted criticism towards you or Dhammaduta Sayadaw, I'm not so knowledgeable about that. But hearing some of the situations that you shared, it does make me think, well, did he literally have no other choice? Was there not some other way that he could have thought to maneuver, to present himself, to be wise enough to know the worldly implications of the religious decisions that he was making? And it leaves it open for question.
I always used to be a very questionable and very criticizing student for him during my time with him in Myanmar, you know. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of someone who wanted to speak out whenever I wanted to clear things in my mind, you know. So, yeah, that's why I can explain you like this. before about my teacher situation. But after the and then what I can say now, he became a Ratha CRO for the International Theravada Buddhist Missionary University, and it's kind of government office, government official, you know. He was appointed by the government. So that's a one thing. Another thing is like, I'm not defending my teacher. Now. I just wanted to give you the full scenario. Like, he's his style is like, he's not interested in fighting. What I can say, like, he's not interested in fighting, and he's really left in his dispo. Not only me, including all of his chai. Yeah, I could say chai. So he really think about on us. Maybe he may angry if I tell you this story, but I wanted to share. He is from the his hometown is Sakai, you know, Sakai region. You know, right? I think before 2 or 3 years ago, he has a situation to return to Sakai for some ceremony or something like that. But the people that the dispersed from Sakai region, including his house, I mean his parents' house, and his sister and brother, or I don't know who, but someone told him, someone called him and told him not to come because the region is not so not clear for security, and he was also very criticized by at the time, and something, you know, so they are so worried about him. But he replied, I didn't hear personally now, but I hear from someone. And he replied them like, actually PDF, the most of the PDFs are PDF are also my student. Actually, yes, what I can say, like, we lost many friends. You know we have a very big young association in Dhammaduddha under the Dhammaduddha Dhammaduddha umbrella, you know what, you know, right?
Yeah.
We call Dhammaduddha Maume or something like that. So after the coup, some of them who denounced from the organization or on the association, we didn't have a official association registration, but we have something like that now. And some people enter the PDF, some student enter the PDF. Some are stay in the jungle, some are stay fighting for the revolution or something like that. He replied to them like, oh, if you are worried that PDF are going to kill me, I don't worry. Because they are also my children and my student. They used to be my children and they used to be my student. So I believe that they could not kill me. So after I hear this, now I feel really sad. I didn't mention to you that I got criticized. I was criticized by the. I only mentioned to you that I was criticized by the military and the opposition politician side. But what I want to tell you, now I have to add you, since we are talking about my teacher. I also received many criticism from my second family. You know, that second family is Dhammaduddha family. From my young brother and young sister. As a senior member, they really wanted me to speak out. like my teacher, like they want from my teacher too.
To speak out about what?
Revolution and that military coup or something like that.
Oh, you're not talking about Damaduta Sayeda, you're talking about the youth as a part of the Damaduta mission.
Yeah.
So the so the young people that were following Damaduta wanted to see more activity from the Damaduta organization in supporting the revolution.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
got
like
it.
This. Mm-hmm. Oh, also from me too.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got many criticism from them too. Mm. Not only from the military and another side,
mm-hmm.
also from my own second family, mm-hmm. like this. And some people really angry with me, and I hear back from the some background, like some people they don't want to meet me anymore,
mm-hmm.
even though we are very close, used to close as a family,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of this issue and this situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I can really feel my teacher feeling, you know, because I just feel them as my second family and as my younger brother and younger sister. But for him, they are his child,
mm-hmm.
his children, you know. Even though we were born by the different family and different parents,
mm-hmm.
we came together organized in the same umbrella,
mm-hmm.
you know, same his umbrella. Yeah, this is until now. This is the most this is the most unpleasant situation in my life too, and I feel so pain.
Mm.
In honesty, I feel so pain whenever I saw someone who criticizing my teacher, who criticizing my teacher. And who used to be my teacher, disturber, and close to him. Why I feel so pain is like this. They should understand. I mean, okay, I don't mind someone talking to my teacher as a very bad guy or very like some people even mention even comparing with the. Very strong left-handed religious leader or something like that, you know. I don't mind because they don't know my teacher personally, you know what I mean, right? I know him personally, and they know student from the Maduda organization, they know him personally, but they are still criticizing him like as a very very bad guy,
mm-hmm.
just only for one reason, you know, not
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
coming out for the military.
So
I can feel like how painful in my teacher mind too. Yeah, that's why.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I feel like I stopped talking about him and about them,
mm-hmm.
in publicly. This is the first time,
mm-hmm.
within 4 years,
mm-hmm.
because I think this is the time to talk to you too, otherwise I will not talk to you very openly, because I'm keeping this kind of feeling and this kind of opinion since the military coup. It's already 5 years right now. Yeah, I hope one day they will understand me and my teacher. Until now, sometimes and maybe they will think like I'm defending some of the listener. They may think like I'm defending my teacher.
Mm.
Actually, no, I'm not defending him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what I am thinking is like everyone has different opinion,
mm-hmm.
even in our family. You know, my father have a different opinion with me. My mother also have a different opinion. Even my father and my mother, they have different opinion each other. But we are still family.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot denounce them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We cannot denounce them. He is still my father.
Mm-hmm.
She is still my mother. You know,
mm-hmm.
even though we have a different opinion, they are still my father and my
mm-hmm.
mother.
Mm-hmm.
If you are really truly Buddhism and truly Myanmar, you should think like that.
Mm.
I mean, because we cannot denounce and we cannot kid or we cannot criticize.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, strongly criticize. I mean, you can criticize, but I mean, you can criticize on the opinion,
mm-hmm.
but you cannot criticize on their status.
Mm.
You know, this is not your choice. I mean, so for me, he is like my father, so I'm always think like that. You know,
mm-hmm.
yeah. I mean, people may think like because of this political issue. You know,
mm.
actually, we used to have many disagreement along the way. Now I met him since 2006. Now you see, it's almost 20 years. We never agree on everything.
Mm-hmm.
We have many disagreement all the time. But we came out together, we discussed together, and we solved together, you know. We used to do like this, not only with me, also with other his disciples too. But what I don't understand is why they are very strong and very criticizing on him because of this issue. You know, this small issue. I mean, if I say small issue, they may be very angry.
Mm.
But if we have to compare with our life, this is the small issue. You know, in our life, we have to face many difficulty too. You know. Okay, let we put this story aside here. If I have to say that my feeling, why I say like it is a very small thing for our life. I used to be a very strong on the politics and Myanmar domestic issue and Myanmar politics. But as I told you, like, this is not my choice what I'm doing right now for the migrant worker in my current job. But after I working for this job for 3 years, what I feel like is sometimes I feel ashamed myself, in honesty, because I used to think the politics is the only thing in my country. You know, politics is everything of my country. But after I work in for the migrant worker, I feel like no, politics is not the only thing for us.
Mm.
Politics is not the only solution for us.
Mm-hmm.
Because I saw many lack of knowledge. Many people are lack of knowledge on the public health issue, HIV, TV, that's what I'm doing right now, and liver rights,
mm.
and also somehow social practice, because they didn't have an education. You know? Another what I'm thinking right in these days is that we are so focusing on the politics. Not only the military government, but also the NLD government too. We are always focused on the politics, so that we lost opportunity to promote the public health education and some development issue, I mean, human development issue and social science issues, you know. In Myanmar community, another thing is very sad is like, I'm not looking down to the medical doctor and engineer. I'm even myself graduated from the engineering school.
Mm.
But in our generation, I mean, 4 or 5 generation until now, in Myanmar society, they think like medical doctor and engineer is the best.
Mm.
You know.
Mm.
So, but what I saw in the current situation is like, we cannot build up the country with only those two professionals.
Mm-hmm.
We should have Laura, we should have social science, we should have humanity, no? You see, in my time, law student are the worst student.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who got only pass grade in matriculation exam.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they went to the law school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to upset this opinion. But when I study in outside, law student are the best.
Mm.
You see, this is what is wrong in my country, you know. Okay, we're trying to talk about the sexual health. how to prevent your body, how to protect your sexual things,
mm-hmm.
and how to use the condom or something like that. But every time we try to talk about this, it began taboo
mm-hmm.
for Myanmar society,
mm-hmm.
you know, Myanmar community.
Mm-hmm.
So when the topic is began taboo, the government doesn't want to touch
mm-hmm.
because they afraid that they lost their image
mm-hmm.
with the Myanmar community and Myanmar society. So people are lack of knowledge on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I learned from my current situation, you know. Like, if I have to compare one thing, our organization also distribute the condom to the migrant worker and
mm-hmm.
actually for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But in my personal experience, we just distributed the condom with the package.
Mm-hmm.
It's also including the other humanitarian stuff like food, daily food, and some kind of hand gel and masks also include the condom. You know, I even haven't lived from that activity. Our Burmese people, the migrant people, they already throw the condom to the trash bin because they're afraid that if someone see condom in their pocket, he or she may think them as a playboy or playgirl.
Mm-hmm.
This is their way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Asian people way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, this is Burmese people way of thinking. Even though in my family, I have to say one funny story. My brother is a sailor, so he spent his life in the sea. One day, before he go to the sea, my father asked him to buy condom in front of my mother. You know what my mother say to my father? She was very angry with my father, and she called to my father outside, and she told her like, "What are you thinking to your son? He may not have a thinking on this issue, but you are reminding to him."
Mm.
I feel like, "Mom, you are wrong." My father is not wrong. You are wrong. He is protecting him.
Yeah.
But you are wrong for this issue.
Mm.
So later my ma understand on this. But this is what I talk to you. This is, you know, thinking. So, yes, like this, if I have to reconnect with my teacher story and that what is happening in Myanmar, it's like, why we are so focusing on the politics?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we still have many things to do in my country.
Mm-hmm.
Development issue, many development issues. Now we have more development issue than the other time in the history.
Mm.
Because both sides, I mean, military also destroy many things. Another thing, the most very important things what I see in my country is like, we need to rebuild our trust building at least 3 or 4 generations.
Mm-hmm.
We already lost trust on each other.
Yeah.
This is a very big issue, even more important than the politics.
Mm. Well, actually, this is where I want to ask a follow-up question that has segued into this, because you're talking about the need to have trust across individuals and presumably communities. And earlier in when you were just talking, your extended answer, you referenced how there was how being in Myanmar, it meant being Buddhist and being Burmese. These were essential characteristics of, and that even if you have different opinions, this is kind of the family structure, the extended family structure that can bring you together.
Mm-hmm.
When you said that, I kind of bookmarked that because, you know, of course, there are many people in Myanmar who are not Buddhist, and there are many people in Myanmar who are not Bamar. And so certainly there needs to be some kind of conversation and communication among different Bamar of different generations, of different backgrounds. But I think beyond that, what really has been, no part in history we can look back to it being truly harmonious and communicative and respectful, really, is the Bamar, non-Bamar mm-hmm. relationships. And so when you're talking about, you know, being in the same family, we can disagree, but we have to remain in this family. And you define that family as being Bamar and being Buddhist. And so I'm wondering where the non-Buddhists and the non-Bamar that hold Myanmar passports that are in the modern day borders of the Myanmar country, where they fit into your understanding of that family structure.
But I truly understand your question. But what I want to tell you is, like, if their family structure is very rooted in Myanmar society, mm-hmm. they may also have the same opinion with me. But of course, as you mentioned, it may differ on their religious belief and on their cultural and traditional belief. But what I can say from you, from my ethnics, from my friends, from other ethnics, some ethnics, they even have a strong rule for family.
Mm-hmm.
Strong family
sure,
structure than
sure.
Bama.
Yeah.
You know, I really admire on this issue, you know. And also it's like, maybe you may see this kind of point of view when you ask me the question. It's also because of the current situation of the war, you know. That's why I don't understand somehow to the military people thinking for the current situation, you know. Mm-hmm. They cannot close the country all the time.
Mm-hmm.
This is the internet era, you know.
Mm.
Whatever you want, you can get very easily within a minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
You cannot close or cut down everything from the people, you know. In my generation, I cannot dare to cross in front of my parents if they are sitting here. If I have to cross here, I may look at their face first, you know. But my sister generation,
mm.
they are very okay. This is a changing, you know.
Yeah, right.
Now in generation Alpha and generation Z, they don't even look at,
mm.
they may even,
sure.
you know, whatever,
yeah, yeah.
right?
This yeah.
is a generation changing
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So I understand your question. This is like the generation changing and also practicing changing according to the generation too.
Well, also the definition of inclusion, of family. Who is in that family structure? Is the family structure Bamar and Bamar who don't agree or have different generations, different political backgrounds, different geography, income levels, etc.? Or is there a family structure that can go outside of Bamar into the ethnic and religious and marginalized people who have faced all kinds of persecution? And if you're saying that among Bamar Buddhists, there might be differences of opinion based on how one feels towards this or that or relating to different monks or different opinions. Well, let's remember we're still the same family. Well, where does that, how is that inclusive of, and what is the relation to those people who are not Bamar and not Buddhist?
Okay. Here I have to say, like, the difference between blame and criticize. Myanmar people are not clear on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And another thing is because of the religious teacher too. Most of the religious teacher teach us. Most of the religious teacher are not clear on what is the meaning between blame and criticize.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm.
So that most of them teach us in the blah way. So we also follow in the blah way too. So that's a, this is one of the beginning of the problem too. What I believe is like, as I told you, like I truly admire all my teacher, Dhammadudasiyaro. He is like my second father. You know, he's like my family. But I criticize on him. If I do, if I have found some disagreement with him. Always I did. I have one experience. Even she is the professor in famous university in Myanmar. I don't want to mention the university name. She saw that I'm talking with my teacher on phone. After that, she told me like, why you are so rude? she complained to me like, why you are so rude? You are talking to the most, one of the most famous man in Myanmar, you know, but you are talking is like your father. See, well, you know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
Even my teacher can accept this kind of situation because we both know that we are not blaming each other. You know what I mean, right? We are just connecting and talking like as a family. But the outsider, they think that I'm lack of respect on him. Since at the time, I always aware of the situation. If I have some outsider beside me or somewhere, I always talk to him as a very formal way. So this is a Myanmar culture, you know. That's what I want to say. Like in Myanmar, we call ngayeji me. It's like you will go to the hell if you criticize your family or if you criticize your elder people, your teacher people, your teacher and your father, your mother, and everyone who is senior to you. I cannot accept this kind of thing. You know? My teacher Dhammadudasiyaro also teach me, like, you can criticize, but you have to know what is criticized or what is blamed. You know. This is the thing. That's why that's why I can tell you is like, I criticize on my parents, on my teacher, on everyone, but I pay full respect to them. As my teacher, as my parents, as my senior, you know. But in Myanmar, until now, in some family, I still confide, like, stop talking. I'm talking to you now. This culture is stay in Myanmar.
Definitely. So, one, going back to your time in Russia and looking at the military coup and your relationships and conversations with any number of people over there, particularly the soldiers, the Myanmar military, who were studying the 700 to 800 individuals. You mentioned how you came to understand about their background, their psychology, etc. I'm wondering, when the military coup happened, and as not just that it happened on February 1st, 2021, but then as it progressed along the years and got worse and more devastating for the country, I'm wondering what were the opinions of some of the military that you were speaking to in Russia? You would imagine those that would be coming all the way to Russia must be somewhere near the top of the military to be able to get that opportunity. So firstly, what were their opinions of as far as they were open and honest in sharing them about the military coup and then the extended military campaigns? And secondly, were those that you were talking to, was there an interest among those military students in defecting? And if there was, did they defect, or were the circumstances too hard, or were they just gung-ho and fully supportive of the military? I'd be very interested to hear that.
Most of them were very stressful as me at the time, what I can say, like, because, but still I can find some people who are very happy that the time is begun for them now, you know, after the military coup. some of them, they think like, this is our time now. This is what we can do for the country or something like that.
This is what we can do for the country, meaning they thought that it wasn't just, okay, we get the gains, we get the corruption, but actually this is going to be good for our country. Yeah. They actually believe that.
Yeah, yeah. Some people.
Amazing.
Some people, they believe that. Yeah. This is very amazing for me too.
Yeah.
You know, because they are young generation, but they have that kind of thinking. So I feel like, oh, maybe. Mm. Yep. Later I found out like this, like, I'm not blaming them. Because I understand that most of the military in Asian countries are like this.
Mm.
They are always thinking like they are the guardian of the country. They are the real protector of the country, real defender of the country, or something like that, you know. So in Myanmar, they are more strong on this opinion, because they always think that like, if there was no military, there was no independence for Myanmar, you know, like this. So they're thinking like that. But for some student who has a vision, good vision, I don't want to say good vision, wide vision, internationally vision, they are very stressful with me, saying they have a stressful feeling at that time. But at that time, I didn't have anyone who approached me to discuss about defeat or join the CDM movement. Because at that time, everything is blah, you know. And they thought that the current military leader, he can do something to get a better situation, you know, at the time. So all of us are still wait and see what happened. I even told him, I even told some of them, like, if people can eat easily, if people can earn easily, it's more or less okay, you know. But at the time, another thing is like, we thought that he would follow the constitution. Because according to the constitution, they have to hold election within 2 years, no more than 2 years.
Yeah.
So we believe, we think that he may follow on this, because the constitution, you know, is a very strong paper institution. So that's why. But now I hear that some guys defeated from the military from Moscow to fly to another country. I don't know which country.
They defected.
Yeah, some of them. Some of them also contact me about they wanted to discuss about the defeat. But I always told them like, until now, my history is clear. From both sides, for PDF and military. So I still wanted to maintain my history to be clear, so that if you want to do, it's your choice. But if you, if you choose to reside in Thailand, I may help you for your daily life, or to get a job or something like that. But honestly, I don't know how to help you to defeat, and I don't know how to connect to help you defeat. So this is my situation. I told them like this. But until now, no one came to me personally defeating and personally. Maybe they also don't trust on me too. And one of my friend, he is very close to me, and he also asked me to defeat, and I even told him, like, for him I get a different answer because I personally trust on him. And I told him, like, no, you shouldn't defeat. Stay in the military. One day we have to change our country. Me, for me, maybe as a politician or as a something, as a someone, for you as a military leader, we have to change our country. I don't want you to defeat. But what I want to request you is, like, please don't change your mindset. And thinking for our country when you became a general. You know what? Because this is I hear from the military people. They told me, they joking themselves, like, people are really hate military until they become a lieutenant colonel. After they became a lieutenant colonel, they really truly fall in love with the military because of the opportunities, you know? You know what I mean, right? It's opportunity and something.
To get rich.
Yeah. So this is the joke from their military, no? From the military people, not from the outsider, but I hear from the military. So yeah, that's why I remind to my friend, like, don't change your mindset when you become a lieutenant colonel. Please keep this mindset because we have to change our country like this. Until now, unfortunately, I have no more than not even full my both hand. I have close friend from the military. Three of them already passed away in the front line. Two of them already finished PhD. You see why I mentioned this, like, they are losing the human power. You know, to begin a PhD is not easy. I mean, to begin a master is easy in Russia, but to begin a PhD is not easy. Not easy for all of us. But both of them lost in the front line. So we lost money, we lost time, we lost people who are educated and who were trained to begin a very academician for the military.
Right. The last question I want to ask is, you have been in Moscow, I believe you, it's 2015 that you got there, and now Russian-Burmese relations are much more examined. They've gotten more attention, rightly so, and they've become closer for obvious reasons that we could get into. However, it's interesting because from your background, you've been a Burmese student in Moscow for so many years before this really got on the radar as it's done now, as well as the closeness and the relationship and the proximity that we've seen. And so I wonder, from your standpoint of having familiarity with Russia and Russian-Burmese relations from long ago, in terms of what you're seeing now, has any of it surprised you? How would you characterize it? And looking towards the future of where it could be going,
according to my research, that if I have to say as you as a introduction for the next time, according to my research and according to my discussion with the other military people for my research for my PhD thesis, and I have found out that the current military leader, Senior General Min Aulai, he doesn't like China. He used to be a commander-in-chief for the Northeastern Command. Northeastern Command. Since at the time he's not trust and he's not he doesn't have trust on China. And before the coup, maybe around 2016-17, I may be wrong for that year, he visited the international military equipment shows and festivals, something like that, in Moscow. He accidentally described in front of the media like that, Russian weapons are more reliable than China. And yeah, he accidentally even mentioned that Russian equipment are more reliable than China, Chinese. Another thing is like, if I have to reconnect with this, reconnect with the ambition of sending my student to the China, Russia, you see, they send around 500 to 600-700 every year. Around the NLD time, around NLD government time, around 400 to 600, but before 700 to 800, 800 to 900, you know, like this. In Moscow, the most students are from the China. Second is, I'm not sure, we are on the 1 to 3. Second,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Second is maybe from Vietnam or Myanmar.
Amazing.
I'm sure we are from 1 to 3.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, the most students are from the China. So this is like this.
Yeah.
So it, I mean, it's no wonder that how he really admire on Russia, Russian technology and Russian things. You know, from my point of view, if I have to say as an academician, I'm okay with this kind of approach because it's kind of balancing and bandwagoning for my country situation. But that also I mentioned in my thesis is like, but we cannot forget one thing. China is just beside our country. Russia is so far from us, you know. We cannot bandwagon with China, between China and Russia. Not only between China and Russia, but also with the US or other country. But one thing we have to remind ourselves is like, China is just next door.
Yeah.
That's why I don't think Beijing will be very happy with the current situation. I really don't think. And now the military administration, they even give the dual industrial zone to Russia to invest some factory in that area. That area is really, that area used to be an enjoyable for China too. And now China is also thinking to build up, no, I know, I don't think it's thinking to, it's already started to build up a canal with the Thai government, you know, in the southern part of Thailand. So, do you think China will be very happy to see Russian Navy in that area? No, because China think like Southeast Asia is their territory.
I mean
in their hand, not territory, in their hand. But now they have to see Russia. You know. Maybe they have a good relationship, but they already divided their territory. You know, China think it like South Asia is our hand, in our hand. East Asia and East Europe and West, East Europe is in Russia or something like that. So this is the situation. And why I told you in the beginning, like saying people are grouping at the same situation. In my point of view, Russia never thought Myanmar as a strategic partner politically before.
Yeah.
Never.
Mm-hmm.
They see Myanmar as a strategic customer,
mm-hmm.
not as a strategic partner.
Mm-hmm.
Myanmar bought a lot of military equipment, fighter from Russia. And also send many students every year. So now, according to the current international politics, international war, now what I feel like they are country are grouping, you know. Now as you see, the European country are also grouping to react the Russian reaction. Now Myanmar are also grouping with Russia and also with China.
Mm-hmm.
But China is like, they have to group with China
mm-hmm.
because they don't have other choice
mm-hmm.
for Myanmar military.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Chinese government also know this issue. That's why I think Beijing also doesn't have fully trust on current military administration.
Mm-hmm.
What I don't want to predict, but what I really, what I worry for one thing is like, if the current military play with the wrong situation,
mm-hmm.
they will have the same difficulties as 1027 again with the China. Because what I see from this case is like China is just simply showing to the military like I'm the real boss. Putin is not real boss like this.
Mm. So Myanmar could be a proxy battleground for several great powers going forward is the concern.
Yeah.
I see. Well, that is a somber note to end on, and also a preview for, I think, where our next conversation can go. So I thank you so much for sharing about this wide range of issues from your personal and academic life, and look forward to getting deeper into some of these topics. And
first of all, I really want to express my appreciation to you to invite me to join this podcast. Second thing is you are really a good interviewer because you take out my personal experience, even though I didn't plan to talk about some of my personal experience and personal things. But I talk to you. And one thing is I trust on your podcast, and because I learned your podcast before, like it's this kind of very diversity podcast,
mm-hmm.
not like only focus on the one issue and one thing, you know. If you are only focused on the one issue and one thing, I may not talk to you very openly like this. And second thing is like, as I told you during our interview, I keep those kind of things in my mind for a long time. It's already 4 or 5 years now. So since you asked me the question, I think some of the things I should tell you what I talk and what I believe, you know. And I really hope that fighting and killing each other is not the real solution for my country. So that the listener would have some kind of different thinking and different opinion from
mm-hmm.
our conversation
mm-hmm.
to find a solution for my country current situation. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Insight Myanmar Podcast. As with many of our conversations, the one you just heard shines a light on a pressing issue regarding the challenges and complexities now being faced by Myanmar and its people. These stories are powerful and necessary to raise our awareness. But the real value of having our awareness raised comes from when it can be translated into some type of positive action. And this is where our pitch comes in. One such action could be supporting us in producing more episodes like this one, so that we can continue to air diverse stories and perspectives about what's happening in Myanmar. That will help raise the awareness and reaching even more listeners who themselves might be propelled to take some type of action. As you might imagine, we do have production costs, and it's mainly the generous support of our listeners that enable us to continue this important work in amplifying voices that need to be heard. And so by contributing, you're not just supporting a podcast, you're helping to create a space for solutions to emerge, for stories to inspire change, and for awareness to develop into meaningful action. If you believe in the importance of these conversations and want to help us keep them going, visit insightmyanmar.org/donation. Together, we can make sure these critical conversations continue to inspire action and change.
Yarananga yaunya na da du ya danam dari ganin da da mana we gara besaya na besaya ho ba yarananda da yarananga na yarananya da yaranam poda ba yaranam no.